Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the AI Boardroom. Yeah, I think we should. It's not really weekly.
It's this month's update on AI agents, which I'm really excited about to talk about.
I think we will try to pick up some pace here. And yeah, for all of you listening, thank you very much for tuning in. And today we will talk about 2025. And I think, Svetlana, 2025 will bring us the year of the agents. And with agents, we mean like proper agents, like AI deciding to use stuff and create stuff and make stuff happen without constant human input. What do you think about this?
I'm on the edge. So maybe the realist in me also says like the companies who embrace AI, so who are not afraid in jumping in and actually developing and getting the value out of them, they're going to win huge. And I think this is where you're going. But the companies who are still deciding, is Gen AI for me, risk averse, still doing prototyping and not really sure when to release these solutions into the wild, going to be limiting kind of the use cases and like the value gained from these systems. But the companies that do embrace Gen AI and like these agents and they in their processes, whether it's supportive functions or their core part of the business, are going to win big because these models are maturing. These architectures, best practices are maturing. They've been in the wild, being developed, refined by a lot of the companies. So there's a lot of lessons to learn. So it's not a completely green field that we saw last year when we started talking about agents. So I think if you're embracing AI, if you've started to tackle those use cases, you got to put them out into production, start getting value from them. Because I think you're right. You can win big because there's a lot of value captured in these systems that you can exploit fairly easily.
Yeah, the interesting part for me is now we like local models or like open source models or open weight models get pretty good. And actually, China is leading the way with new models which are capable of reasoning. They're not perfect. And even if they suggest it with their benchmarks, it's not like OpenAI 01 level, which is like the only reasoning model we knew up until like last week. Now I think we have three out of China, like from three different companies in the course of a week, which is, I think, which is from Alibaba or something. And I don't know. Then we have QWQ, it's Quen with questions. And then you have the DeepSeek R1, and I think you have a third one somewhere there. But yeah, they're all from China, and they all work really well. They open source that stuff. I'm still eager to test it. And one of the models, I think that's the Quen with questions, is 32 billion, which runs perfectly fine on my MacBook. Yeah, reasoning capabilities. And just to put it into context, if it runs on my MacBook Pro, which is a fairly capable machine, but nonetheless, if it runs there, then you can run it like dirt cheap everywhere else where you can run it. That's interesting. And especially if you think like how much you pay for O1, because it's pretty expensive right now. And it's expensive and you use a lot of tokens. So, But yeah, I think this reasoning capabilities are going to be key for agents to do better work.
And I think a lot of value is gained through, as you mentioned, knowledge for knowledge workers, right? A lot of the reasoning capabilities are needed to create documents, create strategies, do research. And I think even out-of-the-box solutions, if you're embracing not even building agents, there's so much capabilities that could be extracted through these search-based tools. I think knowledge workers are the ones that benefit. I was actually speaking to someone last week, and one of the things I came up with was like, who is truly benefiting from these systems? And you hear a lot about these wins and the value gains. And there's research that's published that really it's the value is going to be incremental for your top workers, but a lot of the kind of the emerging workforce is still young and inexperienced. So those are the workers that these models benefit the most. because they upskill them without having access to expertise. So think of them as your kind of coaches to help set those standards. Either you delegate to them tasks that they have to go and figure out on their own, and it's going to take them X as long, and then hope that they find mentors to guide them on the right output, or you give them access to these agents or tools that have these guidelines and these best practices embedded in them, and that helps them upskill and then do their work even more efficiently. So I think the reasoning capabilities are really groundbreaking for knowledge workers, especially, again, we have new graduates, interns entering the workforce. And I think companies are reluctant to hire sometimes like the inexperienced staff, but I think they should be embracing them if you have like all the right tools in place. Upskill them with these AI agents, make them available to them, and encourage the use of them, because I think it's not only benefiting them, it's benefiting you and how quickly and how high quality output they would be able to produce. I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah, I always compare it to a teacher that has infinite time and infinite patience. Like, if you think about like everyone who started in this first job, like back in the day, like his first professional job, like I don't talk about like summer jobs or something, but if you have like your first professional job, you mostly have some mentor or someone who's guiding you, like who's assigned to you basically. And at least in my experience, like there is a lot of friction because the one who's assigned to you, oftentimes he doesn't have time, or he's out at the customers a lot or something. Like you don't have him like at your disposal every time you have a question, which is not a bad thing, because like figuring out stuff yourself is actually a pretty useful skill, which we should still embrace.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could build your AI onboarding assistant in a way that's actually embracing that and not giving all the answers. So there it makes even more sense to build something custom, because you still want to like you wanna augment the process and not replace it.
So because,
yeah. But I also think I have a lot of experience now with using AI for coding. And I would love to have more agentic behavior. And the more agentic behavior I have, and there is some agentic behavior already out there in coding, the more natural it feels. Because now I feel like I only go in there and do like product descriptions and it codes all the stuff. And I love this. Like I cannot even state how it, and even there's like small things. You have two AI tools, and the one is just showing you the output instantly, like renders it out, while the other you have to switch to your browser. Even that little bit of friction like breaks the immersiveness. And I had this, was it on Monday last week or something? I had this half an hour where I just prompted back and forth and everything just worked. Like I had a good case and it just worked. Like I built it up, or was it even an hour? Like it really worked pretty well. And I built like in an hour what I would have needed a week. Like, and figuring out a lot of stuff along the way, which I never would need again just for this one project. And now I just drop in the knowledge into the AI, and the AI just makes it happen. And that's really beautiful.
And I think with just setting realistic expectations also, I think our audience may wonder, okay, this is great that we've heard about the benefits and it's awesome we've heard some of these things, but like, how do you choose the right use cases to apply these agents, right? So it's not just about putting technology for technology's sake just because it's so beneficial, but you have to apply it in the right places.
And also with the right mindset. So you have to acknowledge this is like a new type of doing things. Like it's a bit like comparable to the smartphone revolution, where we started like to getting used to that stuff, like in a new, smaller form factor, and we had to first learn how to use it properly. Like just remember how they took 6-7 years until like everyone and their websites caught up to be more mobile friendly. It's still like still up for a lot of them. It's still out in the open. And that's what I always try to emphasize. This, there's a paradigm shift, and we have to embrace the shift to make it useful for us.
And I think with maybe going with the elaborating on the mindset, I think bringing these solutions, you have to embrace. And I think you and I talked about it privately before this recording, but when it comes to Gen AI solutions, they are prone to hallucinations still. I think that there's no way to get around that, but you can set the right mindset and the best practices for teaching your workforce or the experiences you're enabling but how to use the system right. I think prior to this, you gave an example, like you fed some code into this AI system, and then you knew what was wrong, and you knew how to exactly address the problem that Gen AI, kind of the situation you put them in. But without that proper kind of maybe experimentation that you've done and like the experience you've had, it would have been so much more problematic for you to address those issues. So I think it comes down to AI will do majority of your work, especially if you're using it for supportive functions for knowledge workers to use. But there are some things that you still have to upskill your teams to decipher. They'll do majority of the work for them, but it's really behind the human to evaluate the final output, because it's you who is behind the wheel and not AI completely. So you can't delegate 100% of it. You're delegating a portion of it. That's where the efficiencies and enhancements are happening. But I think you still have to make the last determination whether this is going to work. And sometimes it's just putting it into the IDE and see if it works.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like actually reading through the output and evaluating if it fits what you've asked it to. And then does it pass the sniff test?
I'm shocked that the word IDE was.
I used to. No, I took a course in programming. I'm telling you, I know enough to be dangerous about coding. So I can.
That I heard already from you. Yeah. No, I would love to add to this that it's like, it starts to show that if your people get the gist of it, they start getting creative and the use case problem solves itself. Because who is better suited for applying AI to your business than the people that are running your business, which are your employees? Yeah, I think there is a lot of value to be gained just to get your staff in the right mood for this new technology. And everyone has to. Like, everyone now needs to use a smartphone for two-factor authentication and whatnot. It will be the same. Like, everyone has to be able to use this new technology. And it will be a lot faster in adoption. Or the adoption rate needs to be a lot faster than it used to be.
I think one thing I just want to emphasize, but I think what you said that I don't want to underscore, but domain expertise as you rethink these workflows is so important. When you design, like, you can't delegate a process like improving a particular workflow or process with agents if you don't bring the domain expert who's actually executing that process into that design picture. Like, they have to make sure that whatever you're designing or developing will actually fit the use case, or have someone on the team that is a proxy or at least can be representative of that reality. What might actually happen if you just make some assumptions and you think, oh, it's Gen AI, I'll figure it out, and you don't optimize for a specific workflow, for a specific task or function, I think adoption will suffer, because people will be like, oh, well, it doesn't fit my use case. It doesn't actually fit what I need it to do. So a Gen AI or agentic system for, let's say, a knowledge worker that works in HR versus a coder, completely different use cases. And you can't just say, oh, Gen AI will, or agents will figure that out, like, they're intelligent. You have to optimize these systems to specific use case. You have to validate with the domain experts, SMEs or whatever, who actually perform those functions which you target, and they will bring them along on the journey as you build, but then also help them, have them validate what you're actually building. I think that's a big failure point, is like, where organizations like dedicate these solutions to like these disparate siloed teams, and they don't know what to do with it. They just build the technology with some assumptions. They deploy it, and then they wonder why it hasn't been adopted, or why the users are not happy with the output. Because again, the key ingredient to any implementation, whether you use the domain expertise during the design process or like that requirements process, you have to bring the domain experts who are representative of those workflows or that specific use case in helping you build the solution and actually validate it.
Yeah, definitely. So let's dive deeper into the agent topic. Microsoft had this Ignite event last week, and they showed something they call Copilot Actions, which I found interesting, because it says, I need to do this task every week, and that's basically the goal of the task, and I want to send it to this team. And then it creates from that, just, it's like a guided way of typing this stuff out, and then it just creates you like a flow which you can then execute upon. And I found it interesting because that's I think the most easy way to get people into building stuff out, and they have the Copilot AI engine on the back end, and it's just working for them in their like in their frame, the frame that Copilot builds for them, basically. Mm-hmm. And I found it interesting. And Microsoft also added the Copilot Studio agents, like they call it agents, which have now also the option to be triggered autonomously. And they start to roll out stuff in the business suites, which they built out of the box agents, for example, for order management. Like you get emails, it's connected to email account, and automatically creates an order and just says, hey, this is what I got from the email, this is what I created, is it fine or not? And then they have this human in the loop interface, and then click on it. And being there, like that's, I think, something you should, like everyone should be really aware of, because it's highly important, is human in the loop. Like this whole notion of the AI doing autonomous work, but is able to ask your stuff if it's not certain, or if there's some critical. But for example, you create an order, and before you like post this order or commit to it, you might want to have the option to check the order and actually check what the customer's getting. Like, you don't want, at least not now, to have this be like completely without human intervention. And I think that's something everyone should, like, if you plan on AI agent systems in some way, shape, or form being like autonomous or like trigger regularly every day, like on their own, think always about this human in the loop part, because that's like an integral part of getting this reliable. And it's also the second thing, for the more complex your agent, or the more complex the process is that you want to automate, the more you have to make sure that what you give on an instructions has like the least amount of ambiguity possible. So, because people just talk a lot about hallucinations, and might be a bit philosophical, but I'm like, if I take a random human, I don't give him the right information, he might come up with he might come up with wrong answers anyway. And I had this several times with employees I employed, especially if they are like students and they are not like they don't have the most confidence. They guess stuff, which is just completely nonsensical, but they are afraid to say that they don't understand the task or that they can't solve the task, so they come up with some version that they just guess, which always got me furious. Because I'm not paying you for guessing stuff, but that's a different story. What I want to say with this is hallucinations really a problem of the models themselves, or is it more like a side effect of us not using them properly?
So vague instructions, you mean?
Yeah, because language is like the worst thing to have precise instructions in. Yeah, that's what I'm always like, because look at every prompt ever built, there is still some way to interpret this the one way or the other. So you have to get this, I call it value of ambiguity. You have to get this as small as possible. But because you don't get this out of the system, you have to have this human in the loop as an integral part.
Yes. I think that there's guardrails they can put up to avoid. So there's things, especially, and what we're talking about here is out of the box tools. So how do you prompt the systems? You take Claude, ChatGPT, and I totally agree. If you put in a vague prompt, and you're basically, it's a robot, right? So like when you tell a robot to do something, it's like very deterministic. Like, you told me to answer your question, I am going to answer it. Whether I like it or not, I'm going to make up some things if my life depended on it. That's where hallucinations come in, because if your question is broad and it's determined to give you an answer and it doesn't know what, it's going to make stuff up because you told him to give you an answer. But in use cases where there are custom solutions that you're building, you can actually, like, let's say custom or customer service agents, if you're talking about voice agents, when you can put in guardrails and specific instructions for when you don't know and resist the temptation of making stuff up if it doesn't exist in your knowledge base. Do not respond or tell them like to try a different prompt or to try a much more specific answer. So there's ways around it, but if you're thinking about out of the box tools or even like thinking about like agents, there's probably limitations for like guardrails. That's always the case. So either you go out of the box, which is quicker to market, quicker to implement. They're probably cheaper as well, but you have limitations on how much customization you can make to those workflows. But then you can go the custom route, a little bit more expensive, more time to actually develop. But you have so much control. You can actually design the system to do what you need. You can apply it to specific data. You can apply more advanced techniques that are specific to your field. You don't get that flexibility with out-of-the-box solutions. So it's always like a build versus buy analysis for what is it that you're trying to do and what time frames, and then like how much budget you have, what are you trying to get out of this? You always have to measure it against some of the metrics and objectives you're trying to set and then figure out what is the best route to get there. Sometimes it is out of the box. It fits the use case, it fits the bill, marks, checks all the boxes. But sometimes it doesn't, and it calls for actually bringing in some experts to build those solutions. And again, we can, there's another episode that we can probably do about how to build and prototype
and develop,
determine whether it's the right even use case and like even project out some of the costs and the timelines. Yeah, we can talk about a little bit more, but just wanted to mention that is also a route that gives you more control.
Yeah. So from how I experience it, like I use out-of-the-box solutions to verify some idea that I have with AI. Because building it out in a complex system from the get-go is mostly not suitable, like just from a time frame. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oftentimes go ahead and just try it out with some prompting. Sometimes even not even do a system prompt in a custom GPT or something. Just go ahead and just prompt it to whatever systems just that mm-hmm. I'm using at the moment. And that also works. So it's fine. You can just try to prompt and in a conversational manner get to your desired output. But one thing I want to also emphasize is that you don't get anywhere close to the benefits with out-of-the-box solutions compared to custom-made solutions. With one exception, and I think that's still out in the open, can we build out-of-the-box systems that are customizable enough to be good? And to be highly integrated. And I think Copilot is what Microsoft does there is like this out-of-the-box solution, which can be deeper integrated and which can be customized. Yeah. Meanwhile, like with the new tooling they presented, the customization options will be really versatile. Yeah. I have better hopes for Copilot. And I also think Microsoft's messaging and wording got to a point where I believe that they also got where they have to go. That's good to see. They have a strong partner with OpenAI.
I think this is maybe going back to who gets it first and who will benefit. I think just going back to Microsoft and probably Google Workspace, like those are enterprises already, and both of them are enabled, one with Gemini, the other one is Copilot. So if you're still exploring the space and trying to figure out what value can you gain, that is like a low-hanging fruit for your organization to just subscribe to the AI or the Copilot versions of the system and just upskill your teams on how to properly use them. And then you can have, if you're a Google Workspace type of company, like there's Gemini that you could use across different systems, like whether it's Google, the Sheets, the Word documents and things like that, like the presentations, the slides. Like you can use a lot of it and then build that up, that expertise. And then what that also enables you to do is identify gaps. Like, oh, it does this well, but it doesn't do this well. So that experimentation also instills some ideas and, I wonder if this could be solved with, let's say, a custom solution, but you have to get that experimentation out of the way to actually build an idea, like a mind map in your head. Okay, this out of the box solution or what Gen AI is really good at and then maybe not so great at, and evaluate whether that's like an unmet need within your organization that can be solved and most likely could. With a custom solution. So if it's hallucinating or maybe you need something that's more customer facing and things like that, probably these out of the box solutions that are built for enterprises are more internally facing. So those are great use cases for custom builds. And I'll say another thing that kind of why it makes me think like probably the more predominant use cases are really internally facing, but that's not where, in fact, your value, and I think you say this a lot too, is like you're sitting on the pot of gold. It's like, how can you actually take that data and then make it usable to capture more revenue, build better business models out of them? So that doesn't come from out of the box solutions. It's actually like building custom things that utilize your data that you can do something with to increase the value of your organizations. And there's different ways to do it, but there's been, again, some research that has been done that majority of the companies who are, or the leaders who are applying AI in any of their operations, they're actually applying it to improve their services and operations that are capturing more value. And, but majority of the use cases currently are supporting the support functions of the organization. So HR. But you should rather think about these more revenue generating parts of the company. So how can you make sales more efficient? How can you make marketing more efficient? So anything that has a link to your core business operations has higher chance of getting ROI on those investments. So those things that you should evaluate for custom solutions, and things that are more internally facing HR thing, out of the box types of things, those are lower costs, but easier also to demonstrate like quick value, but also the ROI. You're not going to get as much ROI out of support and agents that you build that are, again, internal operations and things like that. So that helps someone. Yeah. And if you want to hear more about like some of these best practices and like things that we're finding, happy to do another kind of focused episodes on use cases that have higher chance of showcasing ROI.
Maybe also what role data plays into a specific use case. Yeah, there are some interesting, I think, because if you look at the concept level and why data matters, then you get pretty quickly why, like how to think about these systems. At least that was like key milestone for me, like to understand, okay, data and examples and best practices and stuff. And that in the right way, combined to a prompt which is dynamic, which is suited to the request and the situation and the context, that delivers output that's highly valuable. And that's why I always say you're sitting on a pot of gold. For example, if you're a marketing agency and you have data about what ad copy worked really well and what didn't, you can synthesize that data, put it to use in your dynamic prompt, and then you generate human matching ad text just because you know from your data what works and what doesn't. And it's the same, and that's the cool thing about AI. Like, it's the same in coding. Like, you can shortcut experience with a technology or with a set of data with a context, basically. I don't know when was the last time I actually looked at docs. I mostly like just load them into the AI and say, please do this like the docs say. If it's something that's really, really interests me and that I might benefit from doing myself, I still go in there. But most of the time, because that's the thing, like these whole frameworks and code, the whole coding world is changing so much. And it's the same for marketing. It's the same for sales. Like, circumstances change. There are certain paradigms that work. Mm-hmm. These are basically your best practices. That's what you experience. You can program this into your AI, and then you have to have it be able to get the right data for the right in the right moment. Mm-hmm. And that's where the tuning gets in, and that's where you also build out agents that have access to different data sources and functions and can execute stuff on their own merit. And that's where they get agency, and that's where the agent word actually comes from. They get agency to actually decide what function to use when. And and there's a lot of tuning involved, and that's why custom made solutions at some point deliver the most value, because you can tailor this like little details that simply matter. It's the same like if you have your own sales team, which only sells your product all the time, every day, or you have an external sales team, which is good at what they're doing, but they're not your people. Yeah, I think that's...
I'll give one maybe other example that I think you can get in marketing pretty good ROI, because you want to keep probably this type of data proprietary, so you don't want to share with an open source or open out-of-the-box type of tool. but think about brand and creative kind of brainstorming that the marketers do. So what if you preloaded your personas, like brand guidelines, examples that have worked, examples of other things? So that's like the secret sauce of your company. Like, this is something that you want to keep internally, probably on premises, but use the generative kind of creative capacity and the reasoning capacity of Gen AI to come up with these more innovative solutions that are hyper targeted towards the persona and the brand guidelines that you've described. So you're creating these, again, guardrails around like the brand guidelines, best practices, risk, and things like that. But it'll do majority of that work for you per those guidelines. And it's something that you can use repeatedly, and you can A/B test different outputs and see what can work. So something that would have taken a creative team to brainstorm, I don't know, over a few days,
and
different
test
options, you can come up with hundreds of these scenarios that you can test at small, bigger scale on a daily basis. Like, you don't have to like stick to something that, because you have two options, now you have 50 that are just as good, and you're just testing with which messages better resonate, and then what is the highest quality that pulls and converts the right audience. So I think that there's a lot of power, again, in capturing most of that value from, I think, and being able to demonstrate tangible ROI behind some of these solutions, which makes it exciting.
But this will be fairly generic if you don't feed it with your data.
Correct. So.
Okay. Yep. I think that closes it for this week's episode. I think, we should definitely jump on the next episode and talk about the use cases and the role of data a bit more. I think, that might be really helpful to you all.
Maybe one call to action. We noticed that a lot of folks who listen to us, hopefully this is informative and helpful. Love to get you to subscribe to our channel, because that gives us some validation that what we are talking about is valuable to you, and it encourages us to do more of these episodes. So if you don't mind pressing the subscribe button, we'll totally appreciate it. And I guess we'll see each other next time.
Yeah. And maybe on that merit, I also try to go live every Friday, so you can just bombard me with your questions. Because this is, the podcast is always like async in its nature, and having the option to ask questions live, gives some alternative consumption method.
Really valuable. Alrighty. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye.